Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Meet Nikki Grimes, a poet writing from love and a need, a desire and a necessity. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 347 of the podcast with Nikki Grimes. April is National Poetry Month, a time for us to read and write and share poetry. I'm excited to share Nikki's work with you today. She is a poet I hold above almost everyone, and I think that comes out in our conversation. I've grown and loved and seen new things through Nikki's words, and sitting down with her was a great gift. Before we get into this chat, I wanted to let you know that All the Wonders is featuring a poetry picture book this month. It's called Things to Do, and it's written by Elaine Magliero with gorgeous illustrations by Katya Sheen. We're giving away a couple copies of the book, so visit allthewonders.com for more on that, but I'd also like to point out to you two things that I contributed to the feature. First is an interview with Elaine Magliero, the author, which you might have heard previously. Elaine comes from education, and our conversation revolves a lot around the classroom. And the second is an Inside the Book post I wrote as a sort of guide through the poems and art of the story. I'm proud of both pieces, and I hope you'll take a moment to browse them and all the pieces of the feature we shared this month, including a craft and a podcast with the illustrator and Nick Patton of Picture Booking. There's a lot going on. In the meantime, I'm excited to share this conversation with Nikki Grimes. Here's episode number 347 of the podcast with poet Nikki Grimes. Welcome to the podcast, Nikki Grimes. I'm glad we got to connect tonight.
So am I.
It's going to be fun. I'm so grateful that a year or two ago, I had the chance to meet you in person when you came to Maryland for our library conference. I think, thank goodness, I was so busy with running the conference. I don't think I embarrassed myself too much around you. I've been quite a fan of yours for such a long time, and I just remember thinking like, oh my God, Nikki Grimes is coming to this event. What am I going to do to hold myself together?
Oh my gosh.
It was such a pleasure to meet you. I've known you for a while because I've known your work for a long time in our libraries. And I'm so grateful that you write what you do and you champion poetry and story for our children. Thank you.
Thank you. Mm. I kind of have to do it. I can't not write poetry. So.
Oh, see, I love
I
hearing that.
I had to figure out a way to make it work.
Yes. Wait, so poetry for you, when did poetry come into your life?
When I was six.
Wow.
And I think it basically grew out of wordplay because I love language and I've always been fascinated with the idea of words and the fact that one word can mean many different things and just the power of language that you could write something on a page that's funny and someone can read it thousands of miles away and laugh intrigues me, just the power of language. And so really my poetry came out of wordplay, and I would do puzzles and word jumbles and crosswords, and I'd make up my own word games, and I'd thumb through the dictionary and pick out words and figure out all the different ways that I could use that word. And well, and ultimately I think poetry is wordplay, so that's where it started for me.
To have such a love of poetry, of that wordplay, and to find a way not only to play yourself with words, but also to invite your reader to do the same, just makes me feel an affinity for what a great teacher you are in that way.
Well, thank you. I don't think of myself as a teacher at all.
I think maybe as a teacher, there are qualities that I see illuminated in certain individuals, and the way that you've taught me through your books, I'll put it personally, because I can't speak for my students or for the other people listening, but the way that you've taught me about form, about looking and listening, has been something that I value strongly.
Well, thank you. I think so much about art has to do with how we see things, the way we see, and just looking. It's so easy to sort of go through life and just pass things by without really paying attention to them. And I think one of the advantages of climbing into the skin of a child and looking at the world through their eyes is they notice everything that we adults sort of walk on by. You know, how if you lose something in the house, the best way to find it is to find a child. Because they'll find it, because they notice everything, you know, in ways that we just don't. And so I think writing for children and keeping myself sort of in that headspace helps me to see in a way that I might not otherwise.
Have you had experiences in the years that you've gone on school visits and done book festivals and things? Have you had experiences working with your readers where they have shown you something that they saw in your writing that you didn't know was there?
I can't think of a particular example, but certainly that has happened.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought, oh, that was there. I didn't know that was there. I've gotten that sense from, you know, some fan mail that I've gotten,
yeah,
as well as exchanges with children in, you know, in schools and so on. And it's always a wonderful surprise.
I think that opportunity to listen to how children react is something that I value a lot. And I have that experience of hearing or reading other people's words and seeing them react. So I always sort of fancy that thought of the author coming in and hearing firsthand the children reacting to their words. Because I know about how you take the time you do to craft. Poetry is sort of this, maybe on some level, misunderstood craft, because at times poems can be very terse, can be very structured or very loose or very almost ambiguous, and it's hard to understand what it means to spend time with a poem. I feel like it's a little bit of an abstract exercise to understand from the outside what it means to be a poet and to spend time, as you do, crafting a collection of poems following a certain form or the other. But I know, like, for example, that you wrote in Garvey's Choice in the back in the note, you wrote about spending the years that you spent with it, and that it was on that that time that you spent on retreat at the Highlights Foundation, I believe was this particular book, that things became sort of unlocked.
For Garvey's Choice? No, that
was
more with One Last Word.
See, I'm switching them, yeah.
Yeah, it was the Kindling West workshop where I really got into the Golden Shovel. But the Tonka came out of, I will go on a reading jag with, you know, various forms from time to time. And And I just got into Tonka, and I don't know, I must have read 100, you know, before I stopped, and I just fell in love, you know, with the form. And then, of course, once I do that, then I have to write it. You know, so I came out of that saying, oh, I wonder if it would be possible to write a novel all in Tonka. And that led to, of course, trying to write one to see if I could.
Yes, that great challenge. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder if that's possible. Let me try it and see. You know?
Oh, that spirit right there. That's what we need to light up in children. I love that. Is this possible? I enjoyed that you can look at Garvey's Choice and see that there are stanzas, that there looks like a structure to it, but the caveat of all of the poems being Tonka is not something you sort of advertised on page one, like, hey, reader, now pay attention. I'm going to write this whole thing in Tonka, and here's what Tonka form looks like. Instead, you allow the story to have the voice that it does, and then include that note at the end, which I know you've done in other books, the note about the form, the note about the challenge in the form and the structure of the form and how it became voiced in the poems that you wrote.
Well, it has to be ultimately about story. Yeah. I mean, we work in story. That's the thing that matters. And poetry simply happens to be the form in which I tell the story. But story has to be the first thing. The narrative, the voice, the arc, the transformation of the character, those things have to be key. And the poetry should not even be noticed in one sense, noticed, of course, in another. But the poetry can't be the first thing you encounter. You encounter the person, you encounter the character, you encounter the story. And that's what carries you along.
Yeah.
The poetry comes after.
The poem comes after. I can see that. I can see the way that in reading this poem that the form almost disappears, that mm-hmm. you're reading it's the phrases. I mean, I adore poetry for this very reason, that the phrases take shape, that there's, when we're reading a novel, there sort of is no break. There's no chance to stop and think about what we read, there's no beats. Whereas mm-hmm. here we have those. I like, I'm going to read, do you mind if I read one of your poems in here? I love this book. I fold it over. Nikki, I don't dog ear my books. Let me just say this. I don't dog ear books, but this book is dog eared all over the place because I have, these ideas for a poetry unit I'm going to do with my fifth graders. And I thought, oh, I need to share them. This one. Oh no, I should do this one too. I should do this one. But, let me stop. Hold on. Would you mind sharing the story of Garvey's Choice? What's your book talk for this story? How do you share it with readers?
Oh my goodness. well, I just talk about the universal experience of not being seen, of having, you know, dreams that other people don't understand, and not being able to connect with someone important in your life who is so of their own dreams for you that they can't see yours. And that's something most of us experience, usually with a parent, very well-meaning parent, who has, you know, visions for his or her child. And they can get in the way, they often get in the way of seeing who the child really is. And so I talk about that because that's a universal experience, and that is where we find Garvey.
Mm.
And it's in the process of him digging into himself, finding himself, exploring who he is, that he in that process happens to hit upon a commonality that he shares with his father, which resolves, you know, their issues. But what it's really about is finding his own gifts, finding his own power, finding his own voice. And that becomes more important than any of the things he has to wrestle with. And it kind of gives him a tool to wrestle with those things, with his self-image, with his, you know, weight issues, with the bullying that he experiences, all of that. He finds a way to resolve and to engage with those things and to transform those aspects of his life as he finds out who he is.
Yeah.
And focuses his energy there on that gift.
That's
what happens for all of us.
You're right. And I love the transformation that takes place in Garvey and the space that's left for there still to be more learning to happen in him, more life for him to experience. The end of the book is not necessarily an end to his story, but just sort of this beginning. And I love that you've got Joe in the story, his best friend, that says the poem I'd like to read is it's page 51, Busted. This moment, I felt like, okay, I'll just read it. It says,
okay.
Best thing about friends, they know you inside and out. Worst thing about friends, they know you inside and out. My turtle shell is useless. no kidding. To have
Joe call us on our stuff all the time.
All the time, yeah. To have Joe sort of nudge at, like, hey, you know, there's this choir audition. You should audition for it. You're singing all the time, and to have it, to have these experiences of being called out for the honest people that we are when we can't admit that we are those people. I love that truth. The way that a friend can be a mirror to you that way, and then in fact, the way that this book then is a mirror to the reader. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
One of these books where I feel like you took me by surprise, and I feel like, Nikki Grimes, what did you do to me? I loved it. Because I knew if I just studied the cover, I would know where this is going, but I didn't. I jumped right in, and then I didn't stop. And then suddenly I was like, oh my goodness, I've been here. I've had this experience. I've been finding the voice, and I've been around friends who soar at the concerts and this specifically, and I thought, oh my word, to have that, to jump in, the way that, I mean, the way that even the format of a novel such as this, it's written in verse, can move so quickly, can turn pages so quickly because of the white space that leaves. What did Kwame Alexander, when he was on, mentioned another quote from another person about the white space left on the pages are the spaces in poetry, are the spaces left for us to think and to feel the words working in us. And I just felt like, oh, those pages, I can't even. Nikki, I can't even, I'll tell you. You should see me shaking my head now. I loved it. I just felt like, oh.
Well, the other great thing about the white space is that it's less intimidating for reluctant readers.
I agree.
And they've really gravitated toward the novel in verse for that reason. Because even though the work is as complex as anything they'll find in prose, they're not afraid of it because they see all that white space. They're like, oh, I can do that.
Yeah.
And you then can. Once they're in, it's all over.
Oh, and once they're in, as you point out in both Garvey's Choice and in One Last Word, the puzzle of trying to write in this form, I mean, that's, you're right, that's the hook. Once you're in trying to solve the puzzle with language, that's fun. Let me ask just a behind-the-scenes question. How does the process work for you? If we talk even specifically about Garvey's Choice, the process of finding the story arc, of selecting the poems that will become this specific story, the editing of a novel in verse like that, what does that look like for you? Because I imagine it's different from saying, okay, I've got these 7 chapters and here how things are going to break down. Instead, you're breaking it down into something like 100 different flashes of scenes.
Well, first of all, I don't start off with poems that I tried to put together, I start off with story. The focus really is that. And I usually start off with character because I'm a character-driven writer. And so it's developing the character, figuring out the backstory of the character, you know, where they live, who their family is, you know, who those ancillary characters are going to be in that story. And then starting off very basic, I know the first poem is going to be an introduction. I know the last poem is going to be a resolution. And somewhere in the middle is going to be a suite of poems that are going to shape the arc. And so I start off with those. And once I know what stories I want to tell in each of those pieces, then I start to craft the poems for those. And I'm looking at the whole span of it. At this point, of course, I've already determined the time frame of the story, you know, whether the novel is going to take place over a year or over the summer or whatever the time frame is. And I lay out just a few sort of markers that are going to fill that space, maybe 10, you know, 10 pieces. And so I'll draft those 10 poems. And then it's going back and it's filling in and it's fleshing out and it's adding, you know, layers until I've completed whatever the original idea is from beginning to end.
Yeah.
And then once I have that draft, then each draft going back is layering. And I'm usually, the second draft is usually where I've decided, I'm going to lay in a secondary story here. And so I'll start to lay that in. And then I'll go back and I might lay in, you know, a new character. And there's always surprise. I mean, I don't start out knowing everything. There are just so many surprises along the way where, you know, a character will sort of almost present themselves in whole cloth. I'll hear their voice and know that, okay, you belong in here. Well, that worked out. You know, really great. and the ending, again, is almost always a surprise. I'll be going along, and all of a sudden I'll think, huh, and then this happens. Well, now that was cool. Wow. You know, where did that come from?
You know. I love it.
So I have these great surprises. And, and that. I mean, that's where the fun is, too.
I was just going to say, it sounds like you have so much fun writing. Manny was a surprise for me and worked in such a way
completely.
That I thought...
I had no idea he was going to even be there.
But as you're saying your process, I'm thinking, yeah, but Manny's a puzzle piece in this whole thing. He needs to be there. He's a necessary character for making all of this work, for Garvey understanding himself and finding just the right push that he needs for confidence and... having to separate from Joe partway through the character that we've established, the friend that he's been with forever in all these classes and whatever. And suddenly just like that, a page turn, a poem. And suddenly he's not with Joe at all anymore. I could see these characters popping up. I like that. That's nice. And to see that you are almost focusing in, you start with this pulled back picture of the story and just zoom in and tweak. And I assume then along the way, as, for example, as Manny arrives on the scene, you are in some cases then editing the poems that you've already had in order to reflect this new character coming in.
Well, so there's some of that and just adding new poems to, you know, develop his story. I mean, he may come in somewhere in the middle, but then I'll realize I need to go back and set some things in place in order for that to work. So there's a lot of moving back and forth to make that all come together.
I love that. I thought it was so good. You know, I was so interested in that back of the book information, that highlights information. I just, as we were talking, I just leafed in the back and realized that you were with Jane Yolen. As you were doing this one. And I very recently met Jane Yolen face to face for the first time at the SCBWI conference in New York. And I love and adore her. My goodness. And
she's
Heidi,
so,
I met
so
too.
Darling.
But yeah. Oh, my goodness.
They're great people.
That's wonderful to know that in writing, as much as it is a solitary work, that there are these moments when you're around other people, that you're sharing with other people, and to just, I don't know, I just think that the way that speaking out your story and hearing other people read, I as a writer myself, I love what critique does to my work. I love what other people see in my work when it's people that care about me and my storytelling and understand me and my storytelling and can challenge me to figure out the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well done on Garvey's Choice. My goodness. But I am watching our time and realizing that it's just slipping through my fingers. So I need to jump. I need to change gears and talk about your newest, because my word, Nikki, first, I have never seen this form of poetry before. And I thought, this is the most challenging form of poetry I've ever seen in my life.
It is.
And amazing. Is. So let's talk about one last word.
Yeah.
You're, the Harlem Renaissance, the taking... Okay, so I'm just going to say this, and you allow it to be whatever you're hearing it. This is my love letter to you, Nikki. This book is brilliant in that teacher quality, again, to take poems from these figures from the Harlem Renaissance and to imbue them with your own words, to bring in your own poetry, and to have these parallels of then and now and being at the same place, and how words can take on new meaning when ordered a different way. There was so much going on here that I was like, oh my goodness. I need to stop talking now. I'm going to let you talk about it, because I can't talk about this. I need to talk about it. I need to say it. Because there's art throughout this from so many different luminaries that I've already seen in picture books and in just in the children's literature community, talking about, you know, R. Gregory Christie, talking about E.B. Lewis, talking about Brian Pinkney, everyone is here. And I mostly was seeing, because of reading in the Ark, I was mostly just seeing the scan, the black and white scan of their art. I am excited to go out and get my finished copy of it. But my goodness. Okay, Nikki. I have had my last words. Please tell us about one last word.
Oh my God.
I'm blushing. I need you to talk. I can't take it.
Well, a number of years ago, I was approached by a university press who was putting together an anthology in honor of Gwendolyn Brooks. And so they were asking poets to do this new thing, where you would take a line from one of her existing poems and create a new poem. And they explained this form that they had come up with called the Golden Shovel. So I wrote the poem for this anthology, and I came to the end of it, and I was like, oh my God, this is fabulous. I've got to do this again. I have to find a good subject to apply this form to. And around the same time, I was reading collected works of women poets, and especially an anthology edited by Henry Louis Gates, Jr. And I was discovering some of the women poets of the Renaissance who I was not familiar with. And I'd come across Georgia Douglas Johnson, whom I love, but she was the only one. And I was discovering, you know, that there were other women poets of the period that, you know, nobody knew about, no one was talking about. And I was like, people need to know, young people need to know, you know, about these poets. And so this was an opportunity to play with the form, which really I wanted to do, but also to introduce young readers to some of the classical poets, the iconic poets of the Renaissance, that they might not be familiar with, this new generation, and at the same time to bring focus to some of the women of the period. And so I sort of dove in with both feet. But I really, really was fascinated with the form. And I taught it in workshop a few times. I did it first with adults at Kindling West some years ago, and everyone I taught it to fell in love with it. And then more recently done some poetry salons with elementary and middle school kids, and they had tons of fun with it. There's something great about having structure that also sort of liberates you. Children especially respond to that. I think that's one of the reasons haiku is such a popular form for young people, because there's, you know, the set syllabic count, and they can kind of work with that. It gives them something to sort of sink their teeth in.
Yeah.
And this is that kind of form as well. It's obviously more complex, but it feels to me a little bit like creating art, in that I never knew where I was going until I got there, and I love that. I mean, I'd decide whether or not I wanted to write on the same theme as the original poem, but apart from that, you're just kind of making it up as you go along to see what works. And I just love that feeling. And it's a bit almost sculptural. You know, you're just sort of chipping away until you have something that's finished and you say, yeah, well, there it is.
I can see it.
You know.
The form of the golden shovel, to repeat it, to have, for the people listening, to have an excerpt or an entire poem in some cases, from someone else, that you then lay along the word by word, the right margin, and then you write lines that end in each word, word following word, was something that, again, I felt like there was, especially to read the source poem and then your poem and see the parallels in them, in the way that those words, for me, it was the power of words, Nikki. Those words still held their power and even deeper meaning as you use them as well. It almost felt like saying two things with the same words at the same time. It's hard to wrap my brain around. I can see how other people connect with it so deeply, and especially in the way that you wrote this poem, this collection, these stories. There were so many that just grounded me so hard in this collection. But Crucible of Champions, oh my word. That was, I felt like highlighting every line. I felt like this is something that my students need to study, need to hear. We need to put that in the curriculum. They need to know this and ask and explore what it means and write from their own voice. There were moment after moment I felt like where you were just in top form. You just, the call that was in your words, the passion was just alive there. It was just singing. It was beautiful.
Thank you.
Of course. Are you kidding me? Do you want to spend another half an hour with me just laying love on you? Because I have an abundance, Nikki. I'm very happy to do that. I need to cut myself off. Nikki, was there a particular poem in One Last Word, either that you wrote or that that you had discovered, that particularly speaks to you, that you would mind sharing? And then I have a poem that I'd love to ask you, before we wrap up, I'd love to ask you to read to us. I would love to hear you read Truth before you go, but is there another one that you would like to select to read? I'm putting you on the spot. I apologize that I did not prepare you for this ahead of time.
Ay.
Do you want to just sit here and read us the entire book? It's really that good. You could.
Well, I especially like Jabari Unmasked.
Yes.
I take lines from We Wear the Mask, which is one of my favorite poems by Paul Laurence Dunbar. And so the original, I'll read the original lines that I'm working with. We wear the mask that grins and lies. It hides our cheeks and shades our eyes. This debt we pay to human guile. With torn and bleeding hearts we smile and mouth with myriad subtleties. And from that I wrote Jabari Unmasked. Fresh out of middle school, we all understand the rules. Wear whatever's in, scowl on cue to convince the world we're fearless. Anything to mask the million insecurities that pockmark our skin like acne. Gone the grins when we strut down the hall. We talk tough and hope to God it's enough to get us by. It's all lies. We despise the masquerade. It may disguise our fears, but also hides our kind and tender hearts, our agile minds, the wit that sits behind our cheeks. Who'd guess that some of us are geeks and nerds and poets, too? Clothed in shades of chocolate skin, our color works to camouflage our character and promise, at least in certain eyes. One look, and we are neatly judged. This gang, these thugs, these dark delinquents in debt to society. Meanwhile, you fail to see that we are college-bound, more than a few, prepared to pay attention to psychology, the sciences, the arts, to thoughtfully unfurl the scrolls of human history. Instead, you see a thief who uses guile. Is such unfairness what the world is filled with? The evidence is seen in spirits ripped and torn. Still, the world needs the dreams we offer, and should we leave those dreams bleeding on the road, we'd shrink our own hearts down to nothing, and that we would regret. Better to let our anger go and smile. The ignorant ignore as best you can, and in the end, mask aside, freshen your mouth with ferocious lines of potent poetry. With metaphors that mightily reveal the myriad of emotions you feel, yet in all their subtleties.
Mm. Wow. Come on, man. That is... It's beautiful. It's beautiful, Nikki, to hear you read the words aloud as well. I know that you've done this for some time, and I know your love of words, but... It's a pleasure all to my own to be sitting here in my room hearing Nikki Grimes read to me. Wow.
Well, the truth is we all love to be read to. I have friends that will call from time to time and ask me, read something to me, please.
Don't we?
Because I've spoiled them. But, yeah, we all love being read to.
Mm. And so I'm going to ask you, Nikki, could you read to me Truth?
Okay, tell me where that is.
That is page 16.
Ah. The truth is, every day we rise is like thunder, a clap of surprise. Could be echoes of trouble or blossoms of blessing. You never know what garish or gorgeously disguised memories to be might rain down from above. So look up. Claim that cloud with the silver lining. Our job, if you ask me, is to follow it. See where it heads.
Yes. Our job is to follow it. Love that. Yeah. Nikki, I want to close by giving you the last word to our readers. I'll see a library full of children tomorrow morning. What message? Is there a message I can bring to them from you?
Mm. Look inside yourselves. Everything that you need to craft your own life, and you have the power to craft your own future, is inside of you. Believe that. Trust that.
This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 250 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them, Books Between, a podcast hosted by Karina Allen, helping to connect kids ages 8 to 12 and their parents, teachers, and librarians with books that they'll love, and the Best Book Ever This Week podcast, hosted by me, with book reviews about all sorts of amazing books. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referred to. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment at allthewonders.com or rate this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing this podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, Sylvia Barando shares her Mini Bombo series geared at engaging our youngest readers through play, color, and discovery. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.